¿Qué tal, mi gente? Bienvenidos a Somos LFC Podcast de la afición y para la afición. Mi nombre es Julio Ramos, conocido en el bajo mundo como el Chivo Mayor, y ahora tenemos a un invitado especial. Por favor, introduce yourself, my brother.
Hola, amigos. Buenas noches. Perdón, mis amigas latinas, mi español es muy malo, so I'm going to go ahead and speak in English for the rest of this podcast and not, defile the Spanish language anymore. But hello, amigos. My name is Jonathan Reimer from Shoulder to Shoulder Podcast. I just want to say, Julio, Aaron, what an absolute honor it is to be your guest co-host this evening. It's truly a privilege to join you and to have none other than the Jordan Harvey with us as well, too. I'm absolutely ecstatic. There's goosebumps right now. It's like we're singing in the bank. But thank you guys so much for having me.
Welcome, Jordan. How are you, my brother? How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you guys so much for having me. This is a treat, man. I've been, basically in this room for a long time. And so any sort of distraction or if I get to talk to you guys for however long you guys will have me, it's a treat, man. So thanks for having me.
Well, I know, you know, you and Julio obviously know each other because of Julio's supporter relations role. You and I had a brief moment where we kicked a soccer ball around a liquor store 2 years ago when you came into one of my stores to do a Heineken promo. I actually got you to put on one of the Guy Fawkes masks, if you remember, but... Going back to kind of recap the history of Mr. Harvey here, who graduated Mission Viejo High School in 2001. I graduated
Capistrano Valley. Some Capo fans would be upset about that. Two different high schools.
Excuse me. But at the exact same time as you were a senior there, I was a senior at your interscholastic rival, San Clemente High School. So we actually might even know some of the same people from same year. And I'm just going to apologize now for any cigarette butts I may have left on the field. That's going to be my fault there. Apologies. But the illustrious career of Mr. Harvey, everybody knows about. UCLA, he was a Pac-10 champ. Obviously a first-round draft pick, ninth overall in 2006, has gone on to have an amazing professional career from Blue Stars to Rapids to Seattle to Philly to Vancouver, and then finally descended upon heaven on earth here in Los Angeles. So an illustrious, illustrious career stretching back to 2006. A veterano, if I may, and thank you so much for joining us from inside the bubble, sir.
Yeah, thanks for having me. You know, going back to your initial comments about San Clemente High School, I still remember to this day a cross that came through and the field was in shambles. It hit a bump and I literally whiffed the ball as it hit a bump, went over my foot. So maybe that was you, you know, out there creating divots and smoking cigarettes.
I definitely may have been responsible for some donut tracks on the soccer pitch. That is possible. I'm going to go ahead and apologize for you now.
I've met a lot of people, even in the 3250, dude, that have, history, Orange County stuff. So it's really cool. And it makes me feel more at home. So I always appreciate that. So thanks for mentioning it. But yeah, again, thanks for having me, man. This is cool.
Jordan, so, you know, as a little kid, you always grew up loving football. Was that always on you, or how did that happen?
Yeah, so I played baseball, you know, and soccer growing up, football, and I was, you know, gung-ho. My dad only knew baseball, so, you know, he obviously pushed me towards that, but it was only until, I think I was like 9 years old when I had an Argentinian coach, Rick Martinez, who had like this fire and passion, and you know, he kind of instilled that in me from the very beginning, man. He would be yelling on the field and you know, getting these little kids in line, and it was like this disciplinarian role, but he'd put his arm around you, kiss you and hug you and like show all this affection. And that was like the first coach that really kind of instilled in me the passion of football and made me love it. And, you know, obviously I started like most people do at left forward and then gradually moved back to left back. But that was back in the day when, you know, you had Roberto Carlos bombing forward. And so that's what they pushed on me, which was obviously a lot of fun. And I was, you know, like an Energizer bunny back then, just able to get up and down and have a lot of fun with it. But yeah, from the very beginning, you know, football was a passion of mine. And then as I got a little bit older, you know, you have to choose as it gets more competitive, and I had better opportunities in football. And so I stuck with that. I still love baseball, still love playing it. We've had an opportunity to go to Dodger Stadium and have batting practice and stuff. So I'm just like a kid in the candy store there. But yeah, football is the passion. And, I have kids now, and, you want to kind of push that on them somehow. But I don't think it's happening, at least with my 4-year-old. I don't think it's going that way route yet. I think it's a ballerina or something, which is, something altogether different. But at some point they're going to have to get into it, but not yet.
Well, you said kids plural. So maybe we could say congratulations in February. You welcomed your second daughter on May. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. Houston May. She's like 5 months. 5 months, like a couple days ago. So, she's doing great, man. She's like my 4-year-old is kind of a little bit more dramatic, a lot more dramatic and off the cuff like my wife. And this one is just as mellow as can be, sleeps through the night. Like it has no troubles, barely cries. So yeah, that one's more like me. So maybe that'll be the soccer player.
That's got to be very hard for you to have a young one at home and yet being isolated an entire country away. What is that burden like? I mean, so much of us talk about the pressure in the bubble coming from COVID, but there's so many family ties as well through from the player perspective. What does that feel like?
Yeah. I mean, let's dive into it, man. That's the toughest part, leaving your family. And this is an extended period of time. You know, you're going into it thinking, most likely it's going to be 5 weeks. You have to have that mindset that you're going to be here till the end. And that's difficult. 4-year-old, 5-month-old, they're changing every single day. And so you're missing that, which is a bummer. The longest I've been away from them is maybe 2 weeks, maybe. And that was like a preseason, trip back in the day. You know, we've been lucky enough in LA that we have preseason in LA. So I haven't been away from my family, especially having been in quarantine the last 3 months. So yeah, man, I was sobbing like a baby, saying goodbye to my kids and my wife. And that was definitely the most difficult part. You have your anxieties, putting a lot of stuff on my wife, the two kids, her mom is in town helping, which is great. And the club has done a great job of helping, families get testing so that we can get that help and everything like that. So that's been huge. But yeah, that burden is the most difficult thing for sure. And with each day, you may get more comfortable in this bubble because tests are starting to dwindle down. But with each day away from your family, that just builds a little bit more, anxiety. You feel, guilt from just being away from your family and her having to deal with all this stuff. And with each day, like our air conditioner crapped out and we had to get somebody to come out and I wasn't, home to do it. And so just adding one more thing to my wife's pile. So that stuff is tough, but, my wife obviously understands it. My newborn is too young to understand. It's the 4-year-old that really gets me because she's old enough to know that daddy's gone and be upset about it, but she's not old enough to really understand why. So that's difficult. But, with all that said, it's like, it's like you have a job. So many people are struggling right now in quarantine and like I'm doing what I love for a living and able to do this. So like as much as that's difficult and there's trying things about being in this bubble, it's like, then this is what I talked to my wife about. We just count our blessings that, I've got a job, I'm, earning money, able to pay the bills and everyone's healthy, which is huge.
Well, respect to you for taking on that burden and much respect, to Kim for also bearing a significant portion of this as well too. She is obviously beloved in the hearts of the LAFC fans. So mad respect from all of us to her for running that show at home and to you for going through this all to entertain us. So thank you.
Yeah, and all the families, man. All these families that are doing it. And, I'm not just thinking of LAFC. San Jose had to come into this bubble like the 24th of June. And I have a buddy, Shea Salinas, who has like three, maybe four kids You know, there's so many families around that just have like the player, the father is like such a support system that you're taking that out. And that honestly is just the most difficult part. And so, yeah, kudos to all those families that are doing it.
Listening to you telling us about your family and how difficult it is for you, you know, it brings me, you know, just to think of my wife. You know, she works in a nursing home, and for me, it's just when she comes back home safe and healthy, it's a celebration for me every day. You know, so with this, what I mean is that not because you guys are soccer players, it means that football players, it means that doesn't happen to you guys also. You know, because a lot of people say out there, oh, you know, what about the football players? You know, they get everything, this and that, and they judge all of that. But it's not that you guys are humans too. You guys have families too that you know, that obviously are hurt because you guys are not with them, and especially going through, you know, through a pandemic. But you know, it's something is very real, and thank you for sharing that with us.
Yeah, and to what you just said, you know, all of that leaving, but then it's in the middle of a pandemic, so you're just like, oh my god. Which is mind-boggling, you know, but yeah, it's something we're getting through and we're going to get through. And, you know, thankfully, like I said, my mother-in-law is in town and, you know, the club's doing a great job of helping and, you know, giving tests for people that need help to come in town. And then, you know, I'm thankful that I have, you know, I can get on the pitch every day and have that outlet that's like therapy, you know, and, you know, I'm trying to make the most of, you know, being in isolation somewhat, you know, reading a book that I haven't read in so long, you know, playing the guitar a little bit that I haven't done in a long time. So, you know, that's you're trying to see the bright side of everything and try to take this time and make it constructive as opposed to, you know, like a lot of our guys who are probably playing video games right now.
Well, we can see you got your sweet axe in the background there. What are you rocking, man? What's your gear set up there?
Man, I bought that back in like 2009. It's what I take on the road every once in a while. It's a little baby Taylor, just a little travel, like 3/4 guitar, a little acoustic. It's great. It's funny. I bought that one, and then I had a buddy who had the little baby Martin, and I think I like the Martin better. What do you have?
Oh, this is my COVID acquisition. So this is my Epiphone right here that I got off for COVID. I actually bought this off another member of the 3252, who's a famous bass player. So this was actually used on stage with Paulina Rubio. But shouts to Andreas Geck from D9U, who used to tour with Christina Aguilera and a number of other bands. But he sold me that. So I was trying to help an out of work musician and a fellow 3252 member and set myself up with a sweet axe. So we'll have to jam some one of these days. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That'd be fun.
Well, what else, I mean, aside from guitar and that sort of thing, have you been doing to sort of occupy your mind and keep your mind off the craziness that's going on around you?
Yeah, so this first week, you know, our group, LAFC, we kind of took it upon ourselves to take more of a conservative route and, you know, not just go out and, you know, outside or in the lobby, hang out. Like, we are taking it pretty serious, you know, like getting our food, bring it back to the rooms and treating it in a way that, you know, that we know at the end of this week, potentially week and a half, whatever, that things will get ironed out. You know, you had Dallas who had a number of positive tests. You had Nashville that was constantly accumulating. Now they're out. And so we just want to be safe about it. And so we know this is what's in our control. And, you know, we knew coming into this bubble that, you know, with the PA and everybody that, you know, the more serious, the more conservative you want to take it, you are allowed to do that. You can do that. You have the possibility of being conservative in any way you want to. And so we wanted to do that just to be safe on the back end and you know within ourselves that we did everything that we could to treat this, you know, in a way that we didn't have positive tests. And, you know, so far so good. We've had all negative tests. And, you know, in saying that, we're able to train. And to a certain extent, it's a small competitive advantage because you don't have these negative tests. And I know some teams have been, you know, oddly enough, had these false positives that really held them back maybe a little bit. And we're trying to not even get those. I know it's not really in their control, these false positives, but, you know, like I said, we're just trying to do everything we can so that we can be on the pitch and everyone's on the pitch and everybody can contribute.
How's the weather out there for football?
It's hot, man. It's hot. We're training. We had two of our sessions were at 7 o'clock at night. We had one at 9 o'clock because we had a handful of players in that opening ceremony, that awesome ceremony with the Black Lives Matter and, you know, in and around the pitch. It was, that was special, man. And so we had a number of guys in that, so we had to push back training. But, yeah, the weather hasn't been an issue as far as training goes. Like, and that's when our games will be, right? Mainly 8 o'clock or 10 o'clock. And I think even teams that started out training in the morning, like 8 o'clock, they're trying to switch to the later sessions because it cools off quite a bit, man. You know, 7 o'clock, the sun's going down and it's almost like today we were talking, I was with Brad and we were walking out and it was super hot. But then as soon as you step on the field, it's like the sun came down just slightly and it's like the temperature's great. There's a slight wind, so you feel good. And, yeah, it hasn't been an issue, honestly.
Now that you talk about the celebration, something that I was very proud of is the fact that the ref, when the game started, also took a knee. You know, that I've never seen before. It was like everybody there. And it was very beautiful to see, you know, because we are going through some difficult times with society nowadays. And to see that connection of everybody and everybody, you know, and with full force, it was beautiful, at least in my end, especially to see the ref do that. It speaks volumes of what's going on.
Yeah, and Thierry Henry took a knee the first like 9 minutes of the game today with the fist in the air. And that's, I thought that was pretty powerful. And, you know, that sent a good message throughout the league. And I'm sure it'll be, you know, out there tomorrow. But that was super special. And, you know, I think you're going to see that throughout this tournament because of everything that's going on. You know, it's a great platform to, you know, have that conversation, put it out there, and start the change that needs to happen.
Definitely. So let me ask you, going back to football. So how do you become a professional football player?
Oh, man. Well, I never, like, it, for me, it was about getting to college. And, you know, I went with the under 17 national team in the residency program in Florida for a couple years. We did that World Cup. And then after that, it was about, you know, getting to college. There was only like a few guys from that program that kind of went professional at 16. And, you know, I wasn't quite there yet. And so I, having lived in Florida for 2 years, I wanted to go home. So I went to UCLA, but it was only until maybe, you know, my junior year that I was like, you know, I have a shot to go pro. And, you know, going to UCLA, you're competing with guys who are constantly going pro. There's like no turnover. They're leaving after their freshman year. You know, I was playing with John Bornstein, Marvell Wynn, Sal Zizzo, Benny Fellhaber, just a handful of Chad Barrett, a handful of guys that just went pro right out of college freshman year. And so, you know, for me, it was, I needed more development. I needed more experience. So I was there 4 years. I wasn't ready yet. And then, then got drafted. I got drafted by Colorado. My assistant at UCLA at the time was Paul Bravo, who had some ties to Colorado. So he thankfully let me in on the secret that they were interested. And so that was what I was banking on. And and then, you know, you had mentioned that I played for Seattle. It was a loan stint when they were in the USL, and I was there for maybe 3 months, maybe a little bit more. And it was two separate stints of that length. And that was a lot of fun, man. And that was my first year when I wasn't going to get any minutes. They put me on loan. And then the second year picked it up. And third year finally broke into the lineup and thankfully never left.
Who was your favorite player growing up? Sorry, Jim.
So, like I said, I moved back to left back pretty quickly in my kind of development. I was probably 12 years old. But before that, honestly, and this is no joke, it was Jurgen Klinsmann. I watched him in the 1990 World Cup, and I watched that video. Like, we didn't have much football on television, or at least my family didn't, or maybe my parents just didn't want to watch it. But I had this 1990 highlight tape of all the games of the World Cup. I probably still have it somewhere. It's a VHS. And I would have that thing on repeat. And in that 1990 World Cup, Jurgen Klinsmann was just a baller. He was so good, man. And so I really looked up to him in that tournament. And then moving to left back, it was always, you know, the Roberto Carlos and Maldini, like those two. And they're, you know, they're kind of complete opposites, right? One is very strategic and smart in Maldini and very defensive orientated, just like the cleanest defender you're ever going to see. And then one was just bombing forward and attacking and had speed, pace, obviously the free kick. So, you know, I can't be one or the other. I feel like I'm somewhere in between there, at least definitely growing up. But now that I'm getting a little older, I rely more on the Maldini kind of skills, be more experienced and thinking through my decisions.
That's funny. That 1990 World Cup was my first exposure to soccer. My family's German. Obviously, Germany won that year. So I remember, you know, 7 years old watching that cup final and everyone just freaking out. And Jürgen, yeah! And all this, you know, beer getting spilled everywhere. And it left a lasting impression on me.
Who's the left back there? It was the right back. I can see it to this day. He, like, cut in, hit this curler. And I was like, man, I want to be that guy. And that's when I was watching Jürgen Klinsmann, but as a fullback, he was like unbelievable, and he has both feet. I forget his name, man, but he was really cool, and that was like some inspiration right there as a left fullback. But I never quite got that on my right foot, cutting in with the right foot. It's not there.
Well, you're drawing my 7-year-old mind is not remembering the right back's name. I'm sorry. I got to go back and rewatch some of those videos myself. But, you know, you've had an illustrious career, obviously, you know, that fanned, you know, from Philadelphia to a number of years in Vancouver. So what I'm sort of curious about is, when did LAFC come into the picture? And when did you realize that you were going to be transitioning from Canada back to Los Angeles, back to your home where you grew up, and that LAFC was a thing?
Yeah, so, you know, initially when LAFC was announced, you know, being from California, Orange County, and having gone to school in LA, you know, it's always like in the back of your mind, like, ooh, that's pretty cool, you know, from a distance. You're like, and that's what I guarantee you, every player in the league thought that, you know, seeing things coming out of LAFC, what's going on there, the news, everything. And so, you know, for the most part, you know, I'd show my wife some of the stuff, and I'd be like, it's pretty cool, you know? And then, you know, knowing some of the people that got hired, you know, and just going, man, that would be a cool possibility. But honestly, like, my wife and I, it was like, you didn't want to jinx it. So we didn't talk about it. We were like, yeah, that'd be cool. Whenever it comes up, that would be really cool. I don't know, you know, and you don't really want to jinx it. I had many years in Vancouver, and we loved it there. So, like, you know, to a certain extent, we were content. But that last year in Vancouver, you know, so with everything going on, there's kind of some writing on the wall. And, you know, the club that gave me so much, and I appreciate it so much, it was almost like they didn't necessarily value or need me as much as, like, down the stretch of that last year. I don't know if they thought I was gone or whatever. We weren't. But it was kind of at the end of that year, in my conversations, in my exit meetings with all the coaching staff, everything, that I was like, you know what? I think we need to at least look outside of Vancouver. And so, you know, had conversations with my agent. You know, I had played with Thorington, John Thorington, in Vancouver. But in all honesty, I never called him. I was like, I don't want this friendship to mix up with anything. I want this to be organic, and I want this to happen the right way. So I had my agent contacting him and reaching out. And then, you know, I had a conversation with Bob, and I'll remember it to this day. You know, I was in Houston visiting, you know, for the holidays, visiting my wife's family. And I was like pacing back and forth in the backyard. I was like, all right, because we had to retire. Bob was going to call me. I was like, okay, great. I have this conversation. Let's see how this goes. And it was great, man. And it was, you know, everything I thought it would be. And, you know, we talked football, we talked expectations, and it was great. And so with that, signed the contract, I think maybe a day or two later, we worked it out, and the rest is history. But we couldn't have been more ecstatic. It is exactly where we wanted to be, man. And then we came, as I signed, we came into town, and we came to that first like Sunday, the drum session. Yeah. And I brought the whole family down there. And I think midway through, like, my daughter was sitting with another family, like, you know, off this side. My wife and I were like in the middle of the circle, like jamming out. And she's off like eating food, you know, it was like family were feeding her. I was like, this is amazing. It was so cool. And then we got the tour of the stadium, which is rad. So yeah, from the very beginning, we were just excited. And then every day after that exceeded expectations.
Well, that's beautiful to hear. You've certainly had some amazing moments throughout your career. Surely, much to Julio's chagrin, you scored the 10,000th goal in MLS history against our Chivas USA at the time. So a little bittersweet memories there. But,
I remember that. Yeah, that was in Vancouver against Dan Kennedy. I always give him crap for that.
But amongst your footnotes in history, certainly what shines in our hearts, being a Supporters Shield champion with LAFC. And I'm curious, from the perspective of the player, what you felt like from being with the squad in those early days and its potential to so soon in our development being a Supporters Shield winner. What was it like to go on that ride? Did you see that potential from the onset? And did it come as soon as you thought it would?
I'd be lying if I said I knew it would be like this. You know, you don't know what you have until those games start, in all honesty. You know, you don't know, you know, how good Diego Rossi is until these games start, you know, things like that. Obviously, Carlos in every training session would do something that, you know, your jaw would drop. But, you know, you just don't necessarily know. Now, getting into that environment and with that coaching staff and how, you know, you were learning day in, day out, different things. And it was very specific. Their style of play, our style of play now, is very specific. And there's something that needs to be done each and every moment, reactions, you know, where to be, movements to make, decisions, how we want to play, how we want to press, how we want to defend. All of it is intertwined. And it's like, it was such a blessing, you know, like, honestly, to have something like that. Because you sometimes you're on teams where, you know, it's not as specific. It's more like, you know, roll the ball out, we're going to practice 1v1s today. Roll the ball out, it's going to be 3v3s today. There's not necessarily a rhyme or reason behind every single thing. And that's what Bob has. And that is what I respect to the utmost. And he keeps that standard day in, day out. And so to that extent, man, I was blown away. And I was like, this is awesome. And I was soaking it up. I loved every training session. I loved everything about it. And I tried to just implement everything that they were doing. And so, yeah, that part of it just was like, you know, I was like a sponge. But it wasn't until the game started that you're like, man, like, we've got a squad. We've got a really good squad. You know, and
do you remember a specific moment when perhaps that philosophy and atmosphere clicked and you said, okay, well, I've seen potential, like, okay, we've had a few good games. And then is there that, oh my goodness, we're one of the greatest teams in MLS history moment? Because numerically speaking, you were one of the greatest teams in MLS history.
I want to say like that first game, but that was, you know, that first game wasn't us necessarily. I think it was a gradual thing throughout that first season, but certainly I would say around, you know, mid-season, we felt confident in this squad. And like, you know, I think with each game starting out, we got a little bit better, more so like finding our identity, finding our legs, finding how we wanted to play. Because in that Seattle game, we were actually a little deep for a lot of that game, that first game. And I would say that it was probably, you know, mid-season where you're like, now we're really developing. This is actually working. This is taking off. It's like I said, exceeding expectations. And, you know, things were unfolding in the right way. Everything was happening really naturally. And we had some really solid performances that you could build on. And this is another thing with our style and how we want to play. You can always improve. There's like little things here and there that are so detailed and specific that you aren't getting right every single time, and you know it. So you can get better at these passes. You can get better at the timing of the runs. You can constantly get better. And so that's where I was like, you know, we're scratching the surface here. We're really scratching the surface. And you know that the potential is way higher than what you're playing, and you're playing pretty well. And so that's when I kind of knew it was definitely around midseason.
A lot of the pundits look at the moment when Vela left for the World Cup and the team was still able to succeed without their superstar. You say midseason, that sort of draws a line around the same time. Do you feel that that was a galvanizing moment for the team?
I feel it was like 2 years ago. I want to go back to those games and look at like the run of games that we had, but I think we did play pretty well. And it just speaks to the system. And that's kind of, you know, I know you might be going on to the next question, but like now we're in this tournament without Carlos. And it's like, now we just need to stick to our guns, stick to what we do, stick to everything that has made us successful from here on out. And, you know, yes, it's obviously going to be more difficult without Carlos, obviously, but we're still a great team, and we have full confidence that we're going to perform here in this tournament. So, I just, you know, it's funny. We've won these games. Like I joke with some of the guys, we won these games like 3-0, 4-0, 5-1, like these big separation scores. I'm like, maybe it's not 5-1. Maybe it's 3-1. Maybe it's 2-1. Maybe we're trying out more wins. But we're still a good team. We're still going to win these games. And that's what's kind of going through this group right now. Like, man, Carlos is the best guy in the league, hands down. You know, we're going to miss him without a doubt. Any team would in the world. But with that said, like, just sticking to our system, sticking to what we do best, and having confidence in that.
You are truly a professional podcaster. You smelled my segue coming there, sir. But Julio, go ahead, ask the question.
I mean, speaking of Carlos Vela, how did the group took Carlos Vela not going to the tournament?
I mean, like I just said, it's going to be more difficult without Carlos. But in terms of off the field stuff, everyone's in full support of him and his family. You know, it was a difficult decision for him. And, you know, throughout the process of everything, he was like in it, dude. Like, and I know that they knew this decision was coming. So he was going to have to, you know, come out and say it. But with that said, like, you would never have known, you know, as a leader on this team, he came in every day, worked his ass off, led this group, performed. I mean, some of these training sessions, he like never missed a beat, man. Like he was just, you know, pushing all the guys. And so in terms of that, like having him there just as preparation of coming to the tournament was huge in itself. So yeah, again, you know, all the guys are in full support of him and of, you know, you look across the league, like I have a lot of friends who have made that decision to stay home for whatever reason. And it's like, I get it, you know? And, you know, we were talking about my family and stuff. It's like, you know, people are making these tough decisions and I totally respect that. And that's how everybody
Speaking of tough decisions, who's getting the captain's armband in Vela's place? I'm putting you on the spot, coach.
I mean, in all honesty, we haven't even played a game yet. So, you know, we've been building up, and today's training session was like the hardest we've gone. And it was, you know, we have these, it's shorter time, but the way the coaching staff does it, it's like there's no downtime. So it's like hard. But yeah, we haven't had like a full 90 minute game or like an exhibition game or played anybody in obviously months. So I have no idea to answer your question.
I think it's going to be, you're going to be one of the captains for sure. So, I always ask, you know, what's your favorite moment with LFC, but this time I want to ask the opposite. What has been like the worst, you know, game that you have, you know, with LFC? You say, man, this game is.
You know, there's a few losses. You know, the obvious one will be this last one against, you know, Seattle. That one's obvious because, you know, we felt like we had a squad that could really go deep and win MLS Cup. You know, to pick something that isn't so obvious, I would say the Open Cup loss to Portland at home. That one, I just felt like we were the better team, you know, and I was part of that goal against, right? I think I went in on a tackle on top of the box, and he hit it off my foot. I hit it on, and for some reason, the forward was inside the six and picked it up. And he wasn't offsides because it was like a tackle or something. And up until that point, we were like dominating that game. And also the way Portland handled it, I thought it wasn't very classy. They were kind of rubbing it in our faces to a certain extent. And so that's built some animosity towards them that I didn't even understand why they would do something like that. But
haters are going to hate.
You're going to have to ask them, you know. But yeah, that one sticks out for me as a tough loss, just because, you know, I was obviously part of their goal, as weird as that goal was. But, you know, I just thought, you know, these Open Cups, we lost against Houston in penalties. We lost against Portland on a weird, scrappy goal. It's just, you know, you got to believe that eventually, given our team and our quality, that'll come through. The cream will always rise to the top.
It's funny that you mentioned the game versus Portland, because, oh man, I wanted to cry because I came out, I was a Falconer that night. I was like, please, please win this game. You know, like, please. And then, boom, we was against Portland. But, you know, it's football. It happens.
Everybody does that, man. If they have some sort of connection, like my wife, every time she sings the anthem, she's like, better not lose or they won't have me back. You know, everybody makes that connection to the games. It's really funny.
So throughout your amazing career, you have participated in over 60% of every MLS season that has ever happened. In the course of that prolific career, how would you say that Major League Soccer has changed from your day one in the league until today? What are the biggest differences to Major League Soccer in those 15 plus years?
You know, initially, right off the top of my head, just the quality of the game. In all honesty, I think the game's gotten better with each and every year. And, you know, I've been in it 15 years. So, like, every 5 years, I'm just like, you look at it and, like, the quality is getting better. And you know, maybe, you know, now that I've been on LAFC for a few years, like, this quality, I'm just like, this is a very attractive, entertaining brand that we have here. And, you know, not that in the past it wasn't, but I think, you know, clubs are investing more money in players. So you're going to get a better game. You're going to get, you know, better players. And that obviously translates. And, you know, I think that part of it, it's like the owners, it's not just an investment, like they want to win. I think that part of it has absolutely changed. And especially with LAFC raising the bar, Atlanta raising the bar, and these expansion teams coming in. And I don't know if that's strategic on the league's part, you know, allowing these expansion teams that have, you know, competitive owners that want to really make an impact. I'm not sure if that's part of it, but certainly here at LAFC, you know, the ownership group lives and dies by these games. And it's great to see. It's really refreshing to see that they're there and that they care and that they're, you know, the operating, you know, Larry Berg's at training sessions all the time. It's awesome. And you just don't see that. And you never saw that in the past. I had, you know, Stan Kroenke was our owner in Colorado, and I opened Dick's Sporting Goods Park in Colorado. I played the first game there. I don't know if I played the first game, but I was there for the first game, and he came in. The only time I've ever seen that guy was he came in the first game that opened the stadium, and he waved, and he was out, you know? And so, you know, it's really refreshing to have ownership group that's always around and that you can have a relationship with. It's awesome, right? So that moment's when, you know, you need some help or you need some guidance, you can, you know, kind of send them a text, like, give him a call, like, he's at training, just talk to him. So having that relationship is really cool, and that's definitely changed. And like I said, the investment in players, and I think that's just building the game. You know, I think, unfortunately, with everything that's gone on over, you know, the course of this year, you know, I really think this year was going to catapult this league. And it's just been difficult. It's been tough, man.
Yeah, that's certainly been a disappointing outcome because, you know, MLS 25 was on the precipice. I agree with you of catapulting this league, and it's sad to see. And as an Arsenal fan, believe me, we could wax about how much I don't like Stan Kroenke all day, but we'll leave that as it is. I kind of want to get back a little bit, you know, to the MLS's back cup, and maybe you could just kind of take us through what is a day in the life of a player inside the bubble look like for us fans that, you know you guys are hitting training and we hear about all these safety precautions, but maybe sort of take us through what is a 24-hour window in the bubble look like?
Yeah. So yeah. They keep us busy, you know, everything's spread out, but they keep us busy. And, you know, we're doing testing. Initially it was the first 2 days. Now it's every other day. Which, you know, the food, it's good, you know, it's the same thing every night, but it's good. You know, they offer chicken, salmon, and I honestly, like, I would never complain. Like, I would love chicken every single night. Like, I'm okay with that. You know, maybe other guys are like, this is getting boring, but it's only a few days in, but I'm all for it, man. If it's good chicken and it is good chicken, like, I'm down. That's all I need. Yeah, day in the life, it's, you know, we're trying to stay on West Coast time with these evening training sessions. So we have kind of an open breakfast that's, you know, 10 to 12 in the, you know, I guess afternoon or late morning. And so 10 to 12, then, you know, you have testing at some point in the afternoon, which has definitely been smooth. They've got, you know, 8 people signing you in, 8 people taking the tests, and the whole team has their designated slot time of when they come in. And it takes maybe 15 minutes, and it's the 2 noses, swab it, good to go. And then, you know, an open lunch, you know, every other day we're going to have weights, and that's in the afternoon. That time change, that's going to change constantly. But then, yeah, then you head out to training around 6:45. It's right down the road. We're really close to the fields. They've got a number of fields out there. And that's, you know, 7 to 8:39, grab dinner. And, I probably don't go to bed till like 2 in the morning here, in all honesty, but that, it sounds weird, but it's, you know, 11 o'clock at night on the West Coast, and, I'm not getting up till like 10 o'clock anyway. Right. So, yeah, that's generally our schedule. Slightly changes. Tomorrow we have a day off. So, I'm going to dive into a book. My wife's jealous. She doesn't have that time off, but super supportive. Hey, read a book, you know, learn a new song. So when you come back, we can, like, you know, play a new song. And so little things like that. I'm just going to try to stay busy. Absolutely.
What you reading?
So I haven't started yet. I'm going to start tomorrow. They're my wife's books that you know, I think the last book I read was Scar Tissue by Anthony Kiedis, like the autobiography. And then I read Moneyball. But these ones are, she's like super into like Brené Brown and, daring greatly and stuff like that. And so Manifest Now is one that she's always wanted me to read. And then this Brené Brown book that she bought that she hasn't read, the Daring Great one. And so I don't know which one I'm going to choose first, but I'm going to try to breeze through one of those tomorrow. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. Maybe I stop about a few chapters in and I do something different, but it's not going to be playing video games. I'm telling you right now, I'm trying to stay off any sort of video games. I don't even like video games, but you know, it's easy to fall into that or to like watch a whole season of Sopranos or something. I don't know.
Well, that's good of you. Hopefully LAFC makes it much farther through this tournament than you're going to make it through that book tomorrow. But speaking of which, what are your predictions for how far LAFC is going to make it through this run?
Ooh, my predictions. I mean, really, you think I'm not going to say MLS Cup and the trophy? I mean,
want to hear you say it.
Yeah, MLS. that was the thing. Like, you know, leaving, I was like, you know, if we're doing this, we got to win the cup, man. If we're going to, you know, make it out to Orlando, you know, sacrifice what we are at home, you know, you got to bring home something. So, you know, that's the plan. That's the goal. And, I'm looking forward to this first game. You know, it's a little bit different. I'm sure you guys have watched these games. It's, you know, somewhat strange. It's like just billboards behind everything. Uh-huh. It's just, you know, get that marketing out there, those advertisements. It should be cool. And, again, playing Houston, this lineup of games is really fun. I think, like, they couldn't have chose it. I don't know if they did, but they couldn't have chose it any better.
Well, I'm sure you know as a baseball fan, but us Los Angeles sports fans have a little bit of a grudge against the city of Houston right now. Yep. And as sad as I am not to not be able to bang a trash can there on the sidelines every time Houston touches the ball, I'm wondering if that's some bulletin board material that you guys are using to just add that little extra layer to game one. Because we know in these World Cup style tournaments, game one is so important.
Man, you think that guys like Poncho, Cheeky, Sifu, Diego Rossi know anything about the scam that Houston pulled to win the World Series? No chance, man. No chance. Maybe I need to explain it to them, but they're still, it's just going to go right over their head. It's going to go right over their head, man. I think the best bet I have is like, I don't know if anybody on this team could play baseball or plays baseball. Maybe, you know who might be the only person, and this is really funny, is probably Carlos.
I don't know about that because at the NYCFC game, when he did the swing, his hands were backwards. So, you know, maybe that's just minutia to us baseball fans. I'm like, dude, don't swing a bat like that, Carlos. You're going to break your wrist, man. We were worried.
Were they really? That's so funny.
Oh, Jonathan. Hey, Harry, I wanted to ask you, you know, we play León, you know, at the beginning of the year. How was that experience, you know, playing an international game and playing in León and then the atmosphere back at home?
So, I was at the airport ready to go to León. I think I was sitting with, you know, our equipment or our strength and conditioning coach, and I was talking to Carlos a little bit about it, but I was like, you know, my wife's at the doctor's office, you know, she's talking to the doctor. This is when she was, you know, not like due any second. And I was like, you know, if the doctor says it's good to go, then I'm going to hop on that flight. And it was literally, they were like, we're boarding. And I was like, I called my wife. I was like, has he told you what's going on? She was sitting down with the doctor and he told her that her fluid was low and that we need to dial it right now. And I was like, oh my God. I was like, if it was any 30 minutes earlier, you know, that we boarded that flight, I would have been gone. And so, I missed that trip. I went straight to the hospital, met my family there. And, it was a long labor. She didn't give birth to like the 60th minute of the León game. What? No joke. I was watching on like it was pitch black and I'm watching it in the the hospital with her sitting right there, and it was like 60th minute hit, and my wife was like, baby's coming. I'm like, oh shit. I like turn. So I was watching up until the 60th. But yeah, I didn't make that trip. So I don't know that experience, and I'm super bummed about it. I played with Vancouver in Champions League, and we played at Tigres, and that was an epic, epic experience playing against that team with Gignac, and I think it was Vargas, and played Van Damme, who's now with Atlanta. That was epic. I loved it. And so as, you know, the baby came, that's, you know, that trumps everything. But I definitely would have loved to have been at that game. But obviously was at the one at home, and that was unbelievable. It's like, you know, you're down 2-0, so it's like just go for it. And that's what our group did. And it was special, man. It was really special.
Now I just have this visual image of you sitting in a hospital looking at your phone going, push, push, and your wife thinks you're talking about her, but you're just telling the team to press forward, you know?
I've been in that situation before, so I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's definitely a good story to tell. My daughter, when all said and done, you know? But, yeah, it was an interesting, you know, few days with all that happening. And I think I was doing a podcast, and I had we tried to get Will Ferrell as our first guest on Shooting the Shot, and it, for whatever reason, kept getting pushed back. And we were going to do him like the day after we got back, and I had to push that back. And I was like, I'm sorry, man, but that was like another, like something that happened with him, and then something happened with me. And I just remember, like, man, the timing of this couldn't have been worse. But everything's good. She's healthy.
Does it ever trip you out that Will Ferrell is your boss? Like, does that ever even register?
I don't think it registers for him. My boss. I'm sure he'd probably make a few jokes about it, but yeah, it's pretty epic, man. It's pretty cool. The whole ownership group is so rad and so diverse, coming from different backgrounds, whether it be entertainment, investments, and everything. And so yeah, really cool. I you know, having Nomar Garciaparra and Mia Hamm is rad, because, you know, I grew up watching Nomar and obviously Mia, and so that's really cool. And then Magic Johnson is obviously up there as well. Tony Robbins, I mean, the list goes on and on. You know, I really enjoyed doing this with Larry Friedman. And, you know, that just speaks volumes of, like, what our club's about. On other teams, you probably talk to the, you know, the executive vice president of business operations one. And so he was like, I think it was one day after a game, I saw him in the tunnel headed to our cars. And he was like, hey, man, you know, bummer about Beta, but I've got an idea. And he threw it out there. And I was like, yeah, man, let's do it. So it's really cool that, you know, there's no walls. There's connection between everybody. And there's no, like, superiority or hierarchy. You know, you can connect with anybody in this club if you want to, and they will be open and win. That's what's so cool about it.
Well, we sort of touched on the Houston game coming up, but there is another game that is somewhat important to all of us here, you know, in the LAFC world. I don't know if you've heard about it or not, but you're going to be playing Carson. And we obviously, you know, we have our own opinions about them, but I'm curious, is that something that weighs on your mind, knowing that that Carson game is coming up? Is that something that you wanted? Is that something you would have rather happened later in the tournament or not at all? Or what are your thoughts on playing our crosstown rivals
across another town? Initially, for whatever reason, I thought it was the first game. And I don't know if that was thrown out there in the media, but I initially thought it was the first game. And I was like, man, league definitely set this one up, man. Like, they just want to start this tournament off with a bang. But obviously, it being the second game, I think it's good because, you know, both teams will get a game under them. You know, I know there's going to be a little bit of rust in that first game. And so, you know, having that the first game, Galaxy being the second game, you know, it's going to be different, man. You know, all those games, the supporters have been such a huge part of them, such a huge part. The first game at their place, you know, our group was so amazing and so predominant. Like, you guys were like the whole stadium. Like, it just felt like you were filling up the whole stadium and you're only in the corner, right? And so, and then obviously our home games and the last one, you know, the playoff game, just, it's so loud. It's so, you know, pressure packed that it's going to be really strange to be out there without the fans and the supporters, because it's like, that's part of it. When you think of this rivalry and these games, it's like the fans are part of it. That is absolutely, like, you talk about the goals or whatever, but like, if you're in that stadium, you just feel the atmosphere and it comes from you guys. And so that's going to be strange. It'll be a lot different. I would be lying to you if I said I was thinking about that game in particular. You know, in all honesty, like, there's been so many different things going through this whole getting into the bubble, making sure that everybody's safe, healthy, getting these training sessions under our belt, that's been our focus. And it sounds cliche saying day in, day out, we just focus on the next day. That's all you can do here. That's really all you can do, is focus on the next day, because you're worried, you know, about different things that are somewhat out of your control. And so I think once we start the games, it'll be a scenario where, you know, we start to dissect that Houston game and then moving forward, watching clips and really getting into that game focus and honing in on different opponents, and obviously Galaxy being a big one.
You can lose only two games if you guys want to, but not that one. That one, please go and kick the shit out of Chicharito. If you can please help me with that, I would really appreciate it. We used to be friends, not anymore. Only if he plays for the national team, he'll be my favorite player back again. But from now on, he's not anymore. There, so please. I was going to ask you, so since you've been, you know, in the MLS for so many years, what has been the difference between all the stadiums that you have visited and the supporters from all these years to now with LAFC and the 3252?
Yeah, that's actually a question that I've thought about quite a bit. And, you know, having been in Vancouver for so long, you know, we had really great supporters, but there was just a number of them. And I've talked to them about this, and I've been, you know, honest about it. When you have so many voices in a stadium, they drown like each other out. And so, you know, my suggestion to them, and obviously this comes from having been here, is that, you know, you can have your separate supporters groups, but you guys need to come together and build one solid group that is unified and that has one voice. And I think that is the difference, is, you know, when you have all these separate voices, and I don't know if they have beef or whatever, but they need to come together. And that's what I talked about. And similar to the Twins have been, you know, they from the very beginning when I was there in Philadelphia, you know, at that point, they were one of the biggest supporters groups there was, you know. Yep. And they were great, man. I love that crowd. And, you know, and now coming to LAFC, it's like, it's just next level, man, because you guys not only have more, but it's like, you're so entwined and so in tune with everything that's going on and everything with the group and with the community. And it's not just, you know, game day, we show up and we cheer. It's like every single day you're living that, and you're a part of this group that really, you know, practices what they preach.
Do you guys on the pitch hear the different chants? Can you tell the difference, and do you have a favorite?
Yeah, so yes, we do, and we definitely hear it, and it's one of those things where, like, you know, the ball's out for a throw, and you're like, oh, okay, cool, yeah, that one's going. That's but the one that I always talk about is the call to arms in San Jose, and when, you know, you were silent for, I think it was 3 or 4 minutes.
Four minutes,
and then you guys just came out, and I was like, oh, shit, here they go. It was rad. And even on the field, you felt that. And you don't normally, like, you know, take a moment. But, you know, throughout the game, you're playing. And we actually started out the game really well. And I remember joking, it might have been with you, that, you know, I thought we were going to score before the 4 minutes. And what would have you guys have done? And that was kind of the joke in the locker room before going out as well, because we had obviously heard. And so, yeah, when you guys started on that 4th minute, it was like, here we go, here we go. And I don't think it took us that much longer to get a goal.
No, it was very quick after that, yeah.
Yeah.
I also remember they had that giant drum there that's mic'd up, right? And of course, they're making fun of us for mic'd things, but whatever. And the guy's trying to beat it and get the fans going. And I just remember some directors yelling at him to beat the drum. And he just gives the arms up look and points at us and is like, what do you want me to do? This giant mic drum isn't loud enough. Oh, I was like, tears. Oh.
No way. That's awesome.
Hey, Jordan, so let me ask you, we ask, and actually I forgot last week to ask Todd, we had Tosul Dana at the show, but Messi or Ronaldo?
I'm Messi. I think you guys know me by now. I'm not a very, in your face, look at me type of guy. At least I hope I'm not portrayed that way. And so being a defender, I kind of just roll my sleeves up and work as hard as I can. And I just love how Messi handles himself, soccer aside, I just love how he handles himself. And then on the pitch, I just think he's a genius, man. He's a genius. And I love, Bob grabs a lot of stuff from him, and we, especially that first year, and we watch clips, and it's like, he just does things that are just unbelievable. And obviously Ronaldo has his physical attributes and is, second best player in the world as far as I'm concerned. But, Messi just does it with style and class, and that's what I love about him.
Real Madrid or Barcelona? I mean, I think the answer is obvious, but I still ask because Mark told me he goes for Real Madrid, but then he loves Messi and a little bit of Barcelona because of, all the videos you guys watch of Barcelona. So Real Madrid or Barcelona?
Yeah, I'd go Barcelona, just because there's a lot of stuff from their game that we try to emulate. So, using them as like inspiration and as a guidance is really cool. And so, I'd go Barcelona.
Barcelona, tío, que yo soy del Madrid.
Yeah.
Madrid, pero I think Messi is out of this world, so. He doesn't even. He shouldn't even count like as a player. It's just out of this universe. Harvey, we're going through COVID and all this pandemic going on. Any message that you want to send for our listeners, for people out there, about this?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially our supporters, and I mean, it's a broad question as far as everybody, but people that have been impacted, it's on our minds, obviously, and on the guys' minds. We talk about it day in, day out, and we're thankful, that we have the support system that we have. But, I think the message that I would, like to put out is just, my family and we stay on the conservative side of everything just because we want to do our part to keep people safe. And I would just say, maintain that courage and that commitment to not only social distancing, but wearing your mask and doing your part to make sure that everyone's safe and being responsible and respectful of your community and your peers and the people that you interact with every day, because you have a huge impact, and if you can do your part and everybody else can, then this world is absolutely going to be a safer place. And so we do that in a smaller scale here at LAFC and with this group. My family tries to do that, and I just ask that everybody else do your part as well.
Gracias.
Yeah, thanks.
Jonathan?
You mean as far as COVID? As an essential worker, look, please wash your hands and wear your masks. All right. I mean, the safety of me, my employees, my coworkers, my family. I mean, our safety depends on everyone in the community coming together and doing this, right? And I think one of the reasons why the United States is not flattening the curve is because we are refusing to wear our masks. We're refusing to do these simple things like social distance. And this keeps getting worse and people's lives are affected. At this point in time, we all know someone who's passed. We all know someone who's lost a loved one. You know, I was talking to Philly from Defenders the other day that there's going to be some empty seats next time we're in the bank. And that's heartbreaking, right? No one wants to see that happen. No one wants anyone to lose anybody over this. So wash your hands and wear your masks, kids. That's my two cents on it.
Yeah, man, it's you know, it keeps getting closer and closer and closer. That's the way you see it. As you guys know, you know, Jose Salcedo Rey, he went through it, and you know, it was a huge battle. He lost almost like 37 pounds, and you know, there's people out there that still doubts that is you know, out there. But trust me, it's getting closer every time. So like Jordan and Jonathan said, you know, wear that mask, wash your hands, and let's just protect ourselves. You know, let's think of the future. And unfortunately, when we go back to the Bank of California, it's a fact that we're not gonna all be back. But we have to make sure that we come back strong and with hopefully everyone else to support what we love and what we like to do and the stance. Jordan, I want to thank you for joining us tonight. I really, really, really appreciate you taking the time and trusting us and joining the podcast. You know, we have much love and respect for you and your family. And I have a prediction for your future. Hopefully it's in 5-6 years. I know you're going to be a coach. I know you're going to be a coach for sure. And I know you're going to be a great one.
Oh, I appreciate that, man. It's definitely something that I've thought about, and you know, through my time at LAFC, have, you know, like I said, I just am trying to soak up everything I can from an awesome manager like Bob, and I truly believe in like this club and you know, our coaching staff, and I'm drinking the Kool-Aid, man. I love it, and so. Yeah, with that said, you know, I appreciate your guys' time and anything you guys need, man. Anytime you guys want me on, I'm here. Especially now. I've got plenty of time. So if something comes up, you need me, I'm here, man. And I know you guys are the same, so I appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you, Julio, and everyone here for letting me guest host today. Over 60 LAFC podcasts in, and you are my first player interview, Jordan. So thank you for helping me break through that. And I can't wait to play Keep You Up in a Liquor Store with you in the future. So thank you so much for joining us.
And no pressure, but the next one has to be in Spanish for both of you. So just then you know.
Órale. Vamos. Listamos.
Thanks. Thank you, Jordan. Have a great night, man. Jonathan, so it was a great interview with Jordan Harvey. I think that being, you know, so honest about everything and talk to us about Carlos Vela. I'm actually going to say a little in Spanish what he told us about Vela and the entire situation. ¿Cómo está mi raza? Buenas noches. Bueno, ha sido un muy buen podcast con Jordan Harvey, obviamente con Jonathan, que nos ha acompañado. Yo traté de hablar lo menos posible porque obviamente, pues, Jonathan hizo todo el trabajo y se la rifa. Quería platicarles un poco de lo que hablamos con Jordan Harvey y obviamente de lo importante que... De la pregunta más importante de la que todo el mundo está hablando... todas las redes sociales, la prensa, etcétera, ¿no? Que es Carlos Vela. Para nosotros era importante saber cómo el grupo tomó la decisión de Carlos Vela de no asistir al torneo. Y gracias a Dios, lo que nos cuenta Jordan, que todos los jugadores y todos en el equipo están con él, no tuvieron ningún problema. Todo el mundo lo apoya en esa decisión porque saben que es algo importante para él. Y no nada más eso, sino él como líder, durante todo este tiempo que estuvieron entrenando, él llegó y entrenó y estuvo ahí presente para empujarlos. a seguir mejorando día con día, a pesar de que él sabía que no iba a ir a este torneo. Entonces, fue de las cosas que nos habló Jordan Harvey, nos habló de la importancia que es de la hinchada del LAFC, que se mantenga unida, que es lo que pasa en otros estadios y por eso no llegan a tener ese mismo impacto como el que tenemos nosotros en el estadio. Nos habló un poco de sus inicios, de cómo empezó jugando al fútbol. Básicamente su familia era beisbolera, él jugaba béisbol y fútbol. Y cómo, bueno, se ha sentido en esa familia del LAFC, cómo desde el primer día que llegó, totalmente lo adoptamos cuando fue a una sesión de tambores que tuvimos y cómo tanto él como su familia se sintieron bienvenidos y especiales aquí en la ciudad. Y bueno, nos dijo que su jugador favorito es Messi y que le va al Barcelona. Así es que algo que, bueno, que para mi estadística no me gusta, yo lo voy al Real Madrid, pero que se respeta realmente un jugador muy entregado, un jugador creo que es el más veterano, sino por ahí uno de los más veteranos que yo le dije que le parecía que en un futuro iba a ser el entrenador y yo creo que se va a unir a ser asistente técnico de Bob Bradley muy pronto. Entonces, la verdad que muy contentos haberlos tenido aquí y si le hicimos un par de preguntas, nos cuenta la anécdota de que estaba a literalmente minutos de subirse al avión para el partido contra León. Y antes de subirse al avión le llama a su esposa para checar cómo está, porque su esposa estaba embarazada y le dice, ¿sabes qué? Pues tienes que venir para acá, ya van a ser el bebé. Y nos cuenta la anécdota que creo que por lo menos a mí me ha pasado y sé que a muchos aficionados de fútbol les ha pasado, que estaba su esposa dando a luz y él con el teléfono viendo el partido de León contra el LFC y al minuto 60 es cuando nace su bebé. Entonces es de las cosas que nos platica Jordan Harvey. Y nada más un resumen, la semana que viene vamos a tener a un periodista de ESPN que nos va a acompañar, pero les quedaré el resumen en español para toda la gente que se quedó hasta el último y esperamos que les haya agradado. So Jonathan, I was just basically, you know, letting them know a little bit of what we talked with Jordan Harvey. And my brother, thank you so much, man. Like seriously, like I didn't even want to talk, you know, because I mean, you know what's up, and I'm glad that you joined me tonight, and like hopefully we can do this more often, you know.
Jefe, the honor was truly mine. Thank you so much. You know, Somos is an OG podcast, and as much as I've been involved in Shoulder to Shoulder, the honor to come on and join you and to help, you know, bring this podcast to, you know, an English-speaking audience. I know it's primarily Spanish. You guys have done some great interviews in English in the past. So Todd Saldana was a great episode last week. But truly humbling for me who, you know, knew about all of these podcasts as a fan. I used to listen to all the podcasts long before I ever was involved with one. And to think that I would ever get to be on this show, let alone as a guest co-host, is just unfathomable. So I'm truly humbled, sir. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And for the people out there, please don't forget to share. Don't forget to follow us. Actually, on Instagram, we're very close to hitting the 1,000. And once we hit the 1,000, we have a few freebies out there. So please make sure you go follow, share this video. Don't forget that you can listen to us on YouTube and all the platforms of the podcast. Instagram, and also here on Facebook. So, thank you for joining us tonight. Que no se les olvide, mi raza, que somos de la afición y para la afición. Vamos a estar haciendo episodios en inglés y en español. Así es de que, por favor, acompáñenos. Recuerden que todo esto siempre lo hacemos por ustedes, que nuestra única intención es traerles a ustedes la mejor información acerca de nuestro club. So, Jonathan, anything you want to add?
You know, just thank you again. If you want to follow my other podcast that I do for LAFC, it's at LAFCS, the number 2S for Shoulder to Shoulder. You can find us on all your podcast platforms. We got a couple great interviews we did recently. So please check out Shoulder to Shoulder podcast, which is kind of an interview style, family oriented show that's designed around telling stories from the LAFC community in a family friendly atmosphere. So please, if you get a chance, give us a like and a follow it at LAFCS2S. And thank you so much, Somos LAFC, for having me on. It's truly been an honor.
Dale, esto fue Somos LAFC podcast de la afición y para la afición.
Somos del barrio.
A la cancha vamos a ir. Ya está todo preparado, el bombo y el trapo para salir.